Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the very interesting cases
yeah.
for realignment, because what if, I mean, we all look at it right now and we're like, oh, they're not great. Program is kind of on the low right now. What if they do bring in one of those guys that looks at it as a stepping stone, turns it around.
And then Florida comes open the next year.
Yeah, and at that point it could
be. Or Alabama with Kalen DeBoer comes open the next year.
And it could be 28, 29, 30 this happens. And then you're like, whoa, where do they end up when the whole deck shuffles?
Yeah. And by the way, with Florida, what did you think of the week 2 vote of confidence from Scott Strickland for Billy Napier? I think that's the earliest in recorded history.
It's got to be right.
Yeah. I mean, I remember back, it was Jimbo. Jimbo was week 5, week 6 at the end with A&M, but you knew it was over.
Yeah, at that point you kind of knew.
But week 2 was pretty, that's egregious.
That's tough.
That's egregious.
Bump Alex Golish.
Yeah.
Bump USF.
I also, and we'll get to Jeff Calkins here in just a moment.
Yeah.
I talked with you about this off air. Gators fans.
Oh,
please,
no.
Please, 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 please. I'll say one more please. Please, be more realistic about your targets for next head coach. Please. I mean, the last time you did a search, you ended up with Billy Napier, the best group of 6 head coach. I know that wasn't your first, that was not their first guy that they reached out to. But when I see some lists put together by Florida fans and otherwise, I saw a list that came out over the weekend where Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman and Lane Kiffin were the top 3 choices. I'm sorry, guys. You're Tim Tebow ain't there anymore. Urban Meyer ain't walking through that door. It's a different outlook at Florida than it has been ever in the college football ranks. Your money is comparative to the middle of the pack in the SEC. Will more money roll in if you find success? Sure, that's how it works. But you have to find that success. And I think if you're being real with Florida fans about what that next coaching hire needs to look like, take a look at the Tennessee football program and what they've done with Josh Heupel and what Danny White has done. Take a look there. And obviously the name you brought up is a really decent name to look at depending on how the rest of the season goes. Alex Golish. He comes from the Heupel system. He knows offense very clearly. He can recruit the state of Florida. He's in South Florida right now. He's coached in the SEC. Don't think of that as a bad thing. We have a similar situation and coaching hire that worked out very well for one of your peers, your biggest rival. So be more realistic and swim in the waters that you should be swimming in. Dan Lanning, Marcus Freeman, and Lane Kiffin ain't going to Florida. Lane Kiffin's had an opportunity. He turned it down. Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame, he was in the Natty last year. He's recruiting his butt off. He's pretty comfortable. And Dan Lanning, I don't need to explain to you why he should never leave Oregon. He makes a lot of money.
It's a good old Nike money.
And that Nike money he has with Phil Knight is not going to be matched by anybody else in the country. Any other job he could go to Alabama, he could go to Georgia, he could go to anywhere.
Maybe Oregon. Texas Tech.
Maybe.
That's a different type of situation.
I honestly think there's two schools in the NIL world and house settlement, revenue sharing world where it's like, you cannot leave there. You just can't. Oregon. Texas and Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
I'd push Notre Dame towards that.
Okay.
NBC.
Oh, NBC money.
Yeah.
I thought you said and BC.
Oh, like, no.
Whoa.
No, not Bill O'Brien. No.
Like, wait a second.
NBC, they've NBC got that. Money, that yeah. They have their own TV rights deal. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's pretty
good.
Pretty penny.
Right. I hear you. All right, now hour number two is going to start on the other side. We'll bring on Jeff Calkins. When we return, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. But George is in today, and we debated whether or not you watched the end of your Bills victory on Sunday Night Football, that unbelievable comeback.
You mean afterwards?
No, I mean, did you watch it during?
No,
did you make it through the whole game?
Of course not. No. I was in and out, and then when they went down by 15, I was like the 20,000 Bills fan.
That's what I did. I went to sleep.
Who exited? But I, you know, normally I admit to being a cowardly fan. I can't stand it. I just can't stand it. And then this time, you know, when all those Bills fans left, and then Josh kind of chastised them for having a little faith, well, I felt a little bad about it. But. There were so many times they were getting run over. They were getting humiliated. Cole Bishop taking the stiff arm. You know, Taylor Rapp were getting run by like he's a 3-year-old. It was like they were just getting bullied. Now, I did talk to my sons who were together in New York and watched it together. And their view was, listen, even if the Ravens had won, it's like when the Bills beat the Chiefs in the regular season. So what? You beat them in the playoffs, right? It wouldn't have been that painful, even had they. Plus, you get to watch Josh Allen do Josh Allen things. So there's really no reason not to watch. And maybe I will take that into account next time. But it's not like I haven't enjoyed it. You know, I don't have to actually watch it live to enjoy it. I've been reveling in it ever since. You know, I've watched it back. I've listened to every clip. I still enjoy it. It's not like if you miss it, you get no pleasure out of it. I get sheer delight out of it for 24 hours a day since it's happened.
And you pair it with a Chiefs loss to the Chargers. In a one-score game, they had won 11 straight one-score games. They had not lost a one-score game since Christmas Day in 2023, and here they are, week one, losing to a team. And what stuck out about that one, you're losing to a team that mostly loses those one-score games with Justin Herbert.
That's true.
Right?
And literally every team in the AFC East lost, except the Bills. And every team in the AFC West, the Chiefs are sort of fun to look at the standings right now. They're at the bottom, alone.
Surely they won't change. They'll stay that way the entire year, right?
They'll stay that way, yeah. No, but honestly, the Chiefs have a little bit of trouble now because, I mean, in the end, they will be terrifying once they get Worthy and Rashee Rice back, but that will be a while. So, you know, they're going to have – he's going to be throwing to Hollywood Brown and, you know, whatever else for a while. I think the Chiefs will have their hands full for a little bit. And, you know, sort of the Bills. The Bills defense, you know, there's a lot of work to be done because they were not the better team. They were not the better team that night.
And forgive me for this. Was it fluky? Not that it matters. It's a win.
No, it was fluky. I mean, it was sort of fluky. The reason you wouldn't say it's fluky is that this is what the Ravens do, and this is what the Bills do when they play the Ravens, right? Like, was the AFC Championship game fluky? Mark Andrews drops it, you know what I mean? Like, it's so...
Sure.
In that way, it wasn't. But the better team was the Ravens. There's no question about it. And had they gone for it on fourth down like they should have...
Right.
I mean, literally every Bills fan... Who had the courage to watch live, unlike me, every Bills fan or any just betting member who took the Bills, including John Martin, they were all yelling, please punt. And so if they wanted them to punt in that circumstance, it was probably the wrong decision for Harbaugh to go along with every Bills fan's wishes and punt, right? So, right. I don't want to see him in the playoffs. There's no question. You want what would you want is like San Diego. I'm not San Diego. The Chargers, L.A. to knock him off or something, right? And so you don't have to face him again. Because Derrick Henry, I just don't understand how he never ages, never slows down. He seems bionic. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But there's three things that I thought made it pretty fluky. The tip pass to Keon Coleman on fourth down. That's something. But Josh Allen has a hell of an arm because it barely lost any speed on the way to Keon Coleman. It was set up perfectly. It's almost like he planned to do it. Derrick Henry fumbling in that situation, that never happens. And then, of course, Josh Palmer's the guy. We knew that Josh Palmer was going to be the guy to set them up for success to get the game-winning field goal, right? Never any doubt that Josh Palmer.
I mean, Josh Palmer, it was an important acquisition for them. He's not some fluky little, Josh Palmer, they spent real money to go get Josh Palmer. Maybe he's not, maybe he's not the weapon. Let's be honest. He's not Zay Flowers, in terms of the weapon. But that was, I don't actually think, I'll tell you what, it was more fluky. Like, they threw to Jackson Dawes, their third tight end from Georgia Tech, who was exclusively a blocker, literally. I don't know if he caught any passes at Georgia Tech. And before that, he was at Yale. He's like a fifth or sixth round rookie. And there is Josh throwing a 40-yard strike to him. So, yeah, it was fluky. Of course it was fluky. So was the Immaculate Conception of Reception. So was, like, lots of it. That's the way it goes. And so was Mark Andrews dropping a shirt, what last time they played. But it is what they do. It's what the Ravens do. If you look at the number of double-digit losses they've had in the second half, there's nothing unusual about it. It is what they do. And so, let's be honest, if they would play again tonight, the Ravens would be favored again. And I think it's appropriate. They've got the better roster up and down. I think you saw, though, in that game, the reason why Josh was MVP was because he doesn't have that running back to hand off to, and he doesn't have those receivers to throw to, and he wins anyway. That's why Josh was MVP last year, whether you agree with it or not. And you saw it on full display. No Zay Flowers, no Derrick Henry. That's not the kind of reinforcements he has on his side, and he wins anyway.
Yep. All right. Now, I'm sure you watched Monday Night Football last night. Vikings came out on top 27-24. And I think the biggest conversation today has to do with the two quarterbacks, as we normally do. We like to reduce football down to the two quarterbacks, but I think it's fair in this situation because you have J.J. McCarthy, who hadn't played a meaningful snap or a competitive snap of football in 21 months. And then you have Caleb Williams, who now has everything at his disposal. Now that Ben Johnson's his head coach, good coaching staff, good supporting pieces, people want him to break through in year two. But I want to focus on the Caleb Williams side of this thing. One, I guess I'll start here. How do you think he played last night? What did you think of his performance?
I mean, the first half was pretty damn good, right? First half was pretty damn good, and the second half was not so good. I think it's hard to judge, though, when you're going up against that defense, right?
Sure.
The stuff that they throw at you, they very clearly blitzed more and did more things in the second half. So maybe if you're a Bears fan, I mean, if you just look at, the EPA stats for the second half, he was 28th in the league in terms of big games, second half performances by a quarterback last night. And he was missing wide open receivers and did not look like the efficient quarterback who started 10 of 10,
Right.
So whether that was he reverted to old habits, Jeffrey was of the view that he was under siege, and he was to some extent. I mean, he didn't
pressured 44% of the time. That's what the pressure rate was last night.
He was under siege. But again, how much of that is the Vikings? What's interesting is that after last night, Vikings fans or people are saying, well, the Vikings have their guy and are wondering about Caleb Williams. And I'm just not ready to go there with either of those things.
Right.
One good quarter from J.J. McCarthy, and you got, and you've got an uneven performance under siege against a defense that gives everybody trouble from Caleb. So I'm not, I don't think anything is, the book is closed on either of them after last night, I'll say that.
Yeah, and it feels strange to me because I was very much one with Caleb Williams coming out of USC that was kind of hesitant to crown him the generational prospect where everyone else was just so fast to tab him that best first overall pick we're going to have since Andrew Luck, that, things like that were said. And I always said he doesn't work that well on schedule. It feels like Lincoln Riley adjusted the offense so he could work more off schedule, get into scramble drill, make some big plays downfield, use his legs. And I always thought there would be a learning curve. Now, year one, he didn't have a good coaching staff. And now in year two, game one hits, and it feels like everybody is jumping off that bandwagon, acting like Caleb Williams is not going to get there. And I think my take from last night is, and I said this earlier, I got a laugh out of George. It was nice. But one play will look like, okay, this is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. The throw to Rome Odunze on the sideline on the first drive to extend the drive was unreal, on the run, perfect pinpoint accuracy. And then the next play, it'll look like he's a UFL quarterback. Like, it's very inconsistent, but isn't that kind of what we expect from a guy at that age and finally stepping into his own game one of the season with everything at his disposal?
I mean, yes. I think the hope was is that you would see more of one and less of B, right?
Sure.
And so the question is, are you always going to get a mixed bag with him? Is he going to? But yeah, I mean, he very clearly, you see the ceiling, and so will you, you know, he holds on to the ball too long. He gets a ridiculous, you know, potential grounding. Like there were things he does that are just
steps
like,
out of bounds for a 4-yard loss on first and 10.
Exactly. So now, and whose fault was it? I think there were literally four illegal procedure calls in the first half. Was that his, you know, like one of the reasons they went with Daniel Jones was his ability to handle the mechanics of the game. So was that on Caleb, or was that on the coaching staff? Like, what was, or was that on the offensive line? So, but I think you're right. I think the truth of the matter is if you had just seen the score from last night, you would have said, oh, that's about what it should have been. And that probably was a promising performance from Caleb. 27-24, like, that's not bad. That's Vikings win. That's not so bad, right? Of course, one of those touchdowns was caught by the defense. And then you had the second half, which was erratic, which was bad, Caleb. But I certainly haven't given up on him, just like I'm not ready to crown J.J. McCarthy at this point, is the answer.
Yeah, and J.J. McCarthy, if we're being honest about it, I don't think that fourth quarter erases what was probably the worst quarterback performance I've seen this. I saw in week one through three. It was really bad. And he's predictable. Caleb's unpredictable, but I do think the predictability of J.J. McCarthy kind of offset that. When you run the ball well, and this dates back to Michigan, when you run the ball well and J.J. McCarthy's able to influence people with play action, he's going to play well. If you don't run the ball well, he's going to play like he did through the first three quarters. It's pretty simple. And I thought Kevin O'Connell by the fourth quarter really had him going.
Yeah, I mean, he has the benefit of that coach and of those weapons. But still, there were some, you know, there were some nice throws. It's not like, you know, he in the end did have to make the throws. I thought it was impressive, honestly, the way they settled down, because you would have imagined, and I think that Kevin O'Connell probably was a big part of that, right, getting him settled. He was impressive in the fourth quarter, and we'll see how much of that carries over. But, you know, if you were watching in the third quarter and you were on social media, all you saw was, well, Kirk Cousins is available. You know, this is a disaster. Kirk Cousins was trending last night because it was like, the Vikings can't do this. They can't do this all year long. And Kirk Cousins is available. But obviously that was quieted by the end.
All right, now moving on to Memphis football, college football. Memphis is 2-0. They're playing Troy this weekend, and it could be a challenge. I mean, I watched a little bit of Troy versus Clemson, and they had a 16-3 lead at half against Clemson. Then Clemson rattled off 24 unanswered points. Usually how those games go, especially on the road, but that is what it is. But Memphis has won and covered two straight games to start the year. Granted, it's Chattanooga and Georgia State. What have you seen that you've liked, And conversely, what have you seen that really gives you hesitation for where this team could be by the end of the season?
Oh, I think they have the quarterback play is what we thought, right, and what we expected, and maybe the best version of what we expected, right? Like, he's good. He's an effective runner. He's an efficient thrower. And they've been able to run the ball. Sutton Smith looks good. Like, so, I mean, in a sense, I think it's very much what you expected / hoped for. Obviously, the first half was not that defensively. They couldn't cover anybody. I mean, it was preposterous. But then they came back and had the second half that they had. If they can score, and I know this is going to be analytics, and so bear with me. If they can get a defensive touchdown every game, I like that for them.
Yes. If DeMarco Ward's going to be their pick six guy.
As Ryan said, I don't have favorite players, but if he's going to score a touchdown every damn game, he will now be my favorite player. I honestly think the thing that is most concerning has nothing to do with them. It has to do with the teams around them, right? It has to do with South Florida. You're like, okay, these Memphis Tigers look kind of like I thought they'd look, but my God, does that make them still the third best team in the conference? And I mean, the advantage there is obviously you get USF at home. We'll see what USF does against Miami. But I think that's the to the extent that I'm worried about something, it's mostly about, okay, they seem like a decent team, pretty good team. We'll see. But is that going to be good enough to keep up with the best in the conference? What are you most concerned about?
I think the wide receiver, I agree with you. I'm most concerned about what you just said. South Florida and Tulane look very good. But I think if we're going inward, looking at the team, wide receiver room gives me some hesitation. Now, I know they're going to run the ball, but what happens when you play Arkansas in a couple of weekends? Or if you play Troy this weekend and they stack the box and you have to find a guy on third down, who is that guy? Right now, Jamari Hawkins is their leading receiver, 6 receptions, 121 yards. I think he's a good player, but he's been more of a gadget guy, special teams guy to this point in his career. I want to see C.J. Smith get back healthy, but I that wide receiver room concerns me. And, of course, it wouldn't be a Memphis football team in the past, I don't know, 12 to 13 years if you weren't concerned about the secondary. 340 yards to that Georgia State team playing three quarterbacks, definitely. That gives me some hesitation about what ultimately this is going to look like. But I thought it was a bad first half. Second half against Georgia State, they locked in, made some adjustments, and figured it out. But you can't have that first half against better teams. You just can't.
No, in Arkansas, whatever you think of defensively, they look good offensively so far. Like they could give you fits. I co-sign all of that. What, by the way, was different in the second half defensively? Did you, with your football brain, were you able to discern any appreciable difference?
Nothing in particular. Nothing in particular. Let me go watch back the film, and I'll get back to you, Jeff.
Good. Yeah, that's what coaches say. You're practicing to be a coach. I will say, you know, to be able to find a guy who can come in and kick a 55-yarder at the end of the first half, that's impressive.
And then missed a 40-yarder, right?
Yeah, well.
The 55-yarder is better, you know. We'll take it.
It did feel like that created, I don't know, like, what's momentum feel like in the locker room? You tell me. It felt like, to me, that mattered.
It did. You know, like
going into the locker room with the lead in a half where you should not have had the lead felt like, to me, like, you know, damn, we got this. And, had I been at that game and been the columnist, I would have written about that kick and then the second half, you know, and sort of what changed. Because it was striking, the difference. I mean, second half was comfortable, you know.
Yep.
You're watching the first half, you're pulling your hair out. The second half was completely in control. Completely in control.
No doubt. Now, I'll let you roll, but I will get on that film and let you know what they changed from the first half to second half.
Thanks, Gabe.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
Yeah.
He's Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X. Daily Memphian columnist, also host the Jeff Calkins Show, 9-11. Every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Now, yes, you can look internally at the concerns. And I brought up wide receiver room. I brought up secondary. That's there. I do think what Jeff pointed out as the biggest concern is the biggest concern. Looking around this conference, you do have more to trifle with, more to deal with than you thought. South Florida has broken through. Tulane's still there. Navy has Blake Horvath. They still look good. You definitely have to take that into consideration. And worth noting, and this is betting odds, Vegas stuff, but per FanDuel Sportsbook, South Florida started the season as fifth shortest odds to win the American Conference. They have propelled with their first two ranked wins to first. They are plus 210, Tulane plus 300, Navy plus 500, and Memphis at fourth, plus 600. So it's been a immediate jump in the view of South Florida, and quite frankly, just this breakthrough has been cool to watch. But I think for Memphis fans, you circle that home game against South Florida and you say, it's cool now, but when we play them then, how do we feel? Sort of where we're at. All right, now we need to take a trip around the National Football League. We'll do that next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League with week one in the rear view, week two on the way. George, go ahead and hit it. All right, so the Chicago Bears lost last night. A lot has been made about Caleb Williams, and I already talked about that, but that's not what I want to focus on here. I want to rewind back to the history of Ryan Poles as the GM of the Chicago Bears. He was hired in 2020 after Ryan Pace was fired for a lot of bad draft picks, a lot of bad decisions. But Ryan Poles said this at his opening presser as the Bears GM. He's talking about the NFC North. The NFC North that features the Packers, the Vikings, and the Lions. They're going to take the North, and they're going to never give it back. With last night's loss, and since Ryan Poles said that, do you care to take a guess as to what the record the Bears have against the North in Ryan Poles' tenure?
If I didn't already have the answer.
Okay, so
but
I'll tell you.
I was just going to say, I would guess pretty bad.
Bad.
Pretty bad.
Since Ryan Poles took over the GM position of the Chicago Bears and said they're going to take the North and never give it back, they are 3-19 against NFC North divisional opponents. They have not taken the North, and they certainly, when you don't take it, you can't give it, never give it back. So, I guess they're still in the process of taking it. That's what I guess Ryan Poles thinks right now. But not good, not good at all. Okay. What's Howie Roseman doing? He made another trade, George. I mean, he's an evil scientist. So yesterday, for those that did not pay attention, he traded with the Jaguars. Jaguars are sending Tank Bigsby, their backup running back, who was supposed to get a lot of run, but Travis Etienne looked really good in week one. Had, I think, 119 yards and a touchdown.
He was very good.
But Tank Bigsby was traded to the Eagles in exchange for 2026 fifth and sixth round pick. But this is just one in a long line of trades that have been made since camp started. He traded for John Mechie,
yep.
Sam Howell, offensive tackle Fred Johnson, Darian Kennard, and now Tank Bigsby. An offensive tackle, Darian Kennard from the Packers. I am of the understanding that if you're in a GM position and you're a guy like Howie Roseman, you make any move that is going to make your team better. But here's what I find hard to believe. That he thinks all of these players that he traded for are going to make a palpable difference to the Eagles' season. So in that case, my mind starts to wander, and I have no real answers. What is his plan with all these trades he's made? And here's the other part that's just mind-blowing. He traded that fifth and sixth round pick in 2026. They still have three 2026 fifth round picks in next year's draft. They traded that fifth round pick to get Tank Bigsby. They still have three fifth round picks left. I mean, he's really good at his job. We understand that. You don't win a Super Bowl and go to another without being good at your job. And also getting Jalen Hurts and finding Nick Sirianni and pairing them together and making this brain trust work, that's on the GM as well. And Howie Roseman was the guy that made that happen. But surely not all these trades are for this year. So, like, what's he doing? Well, I'm just trying to understand, and it freaks me out. It freaks me out. It really does, George.
I have no idea what he's doing. What is Howie Roseman cooking? And the thing is, he's one of those guys in the NFL where it feels like if he makes a trade, it's not for no reason.
Yes.
And it's all calculated, and they most of the time, they tend to pan out.
And it was kind of – he kind of reminds me of – and this is way back, because now we know Bill Belichick to be the Jordan Hudson, you know, beau. That's what he is at this point.
Yikes.
But, like, back in the day, whenever you saw Bill Belichick reach for a guy in the first round or make a trade, you're like, oh, God, what's going on? What's happening? Howie Roseman's that guy now. Howie Roseman, when he makes a move, you sit back and you're like, there's got to be something going on. He's cooking something up that I don't know about that's going to take the league by storm.
The one thing I will give him is it is kind of the rest of the league's fault in the draft. They're just like, hey, all these super talented guys, let's just
that's true.
Let them slide. And he's
this year, trade up one spot, to get John Campbell, who's already one of the best defensive players on that team. I mean, and then the Jalen Carter thing, the Nolan thing. I mean, it's just he finds a way to just play chess. 3D chess while everybody else is playing Uno. Like, I don't even know. I don't understand it. Let's move on to the next topic, though. Okay, so a lot of things here. George Kittle is expected to be sidelined for multiple weeks with a hamstring injury. What else is new?
Already hit IR.
He's already on the IR, so a minimum of 4 weeks he'll be out. Brock Purdy has a left shoulder and a toe injury that will make him uncertain for Sunday's game against New Orleans. Kyle Shanahan said the team... we'll see how the week of practice goes for him. And he'll be held out of certain things, probably 11-on-11s, things like that.
Who's their backup?
If Purdy cannot play, there we go. 49ers backup, Mac Jones.
Oh!
Would be in line to start. But what's kind of funny about that is when Mac Jones came out of Alabama, do you remember who? We remember the 49ers took Trey Lance. You remember who Kyle Shanahan wanted, though, with the second overall pick? He wanted Mac Jones, but everybody was like, you can't take Mac Jones second overall, you psycho. So maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, but Mac Jones is a guy that he's had his eyes on for a long time. Also, this is the good news. Juwan Jennings' shoulder MRI, came back clean. So they have a wide receiver, they have a pass catcher.
Bless.
So there's that. Christian McCaffrey, though. His calf, I don't know what it's made out of at this point. Didn't he go over to Germany to get, like, some things done?
Something like that.
I don't know how long it's going to hold up.
He's not week to week. He's not day to day. He's hour to hour. But you never know.
Yeah, the 49ers just, in Kyle Shanahan's tenure, and I think he's a good coach, got into a Super Bowl, has a really good team, has done a good job with Brock Purdy. They have the worst injury luck in the National Football League since he took over as head coach, and I don't even think there's a close second. I don't even think it's close. Because they were the most injured team last year, and through week one, already the most injured team in the National Football League. Final thing, Jake Moody's been released. We knew that was happening.
I will
say
this.
Their kicker, who missed two kicks.
Did you see who they're bringing in to take a look?
Isn't there like 15 different kickers they're going to give a tryout to?
I only saw one bit, like, I won't even say big name, but like a known NFL kicker that they're taking a look at.
Drop it.
Eddie Pinero.
Why does he keep getting opportunities? What has he done to earn these opportunities? He's gotten cut by like 15 teams for missing kicks. What are they seeing?
I don't know.
Where's Rodrigo Blankenship? Can you bring him out?
Where's
he? My guy?
Where are the Rex specs? Bring them back.
Yeah, where's my Pokemon card trader? Like, bring him back.
Jeez. Oh, you don't mean Blake Cashman.
Next thing. Final thing I'll end this on. Tyreek Hill's estranged wife, Keita Vaccaro, alleges 8 separate incidents of domestic violence and filings related to the couple's divorce case. And if you know anything about Tyreek Hill, this is not the first situation that has ever popped up where domestic violence has been something he's been accused of. It dates back to Oklahoma State when he was in college. Hill's attorney said in a statement Monday that the allegations are part of a shakedown, adding that they are an attempt to generate bad media coverage for Hill. According to TMZ, Vaccaro alleges that the first incident occurred in January 2024, about 2 months after her marriage to Hill. Another thing, separate from the domestic violence, Tyreek Hill was in a physical altercation at Hallover Marina in the Miami area with an employee in June 2023 And a separate lawsuit alleges he broke a social media influencer's leg that same month. I'm not going to say I'm surprised. Like, I know that Tyreek Hill sort of finds himself in these situations pretty consistently. But I think what it does for me, especially coming off that 33-8 week one drubbing that they took at the hands of Daniel Jones or Indiana Jones' Colts, it just shows me that the vibes in Miami are bad and they're not going to get any better.
Things are not good down there.
And did
right
you
now.
Happen to see Mike McDaniel at his Monday presser yesterday?
I did not.
He gave it the, well, it can't get any worse.
Oh,
thing.
You can't
and it's
do
like,
that.
Well,
they can.
This happened. This came out in the news today. It can get worse, Mike. It very much can get worse.
When you think it can't, nobody can it.
It can. That'll do it for a trip around the National Football League. One more segment left in hour number two. We'll go ahead and get to small talk on the other side, and we're going to go out to an AP poll voter who is coming under fire, to say the least. That's next. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, I mentioned it on Monday, but I had a problem with the AP poll. Just in general, it had to do with South Florida being ranked at 18. Because the idea behind my gripe is South Florida beat the number 25 team in the country, and then they beat the number 13 team in the country on the road in one of the toughest environments in college football in the Swamp, beating Florida. And my question that I posed to you all was, if they had an Alabama A on the side of their helmet, would they be ranked anywhere besides outside inside the top five? So that's the gripe I have. It wasn't surprising that they ended up at 18. It was more of a patronizing, oh, you're welcome to the party finally. That's kind of what I thought about that
golf claps.
That
it's golf claps. It's,
how, you know, how just the pollsters put it out there for South Florida. Now, there was one voter in particular that came under fire. Her name is Haley Sawyer. She is a USC sports reporter and beat writer for the SoCal News Group. And her ballot was very wonky. It was all over the place. And it particularly had to do with South Florida and Florida and their placement. She moved Florida after their loss to South Florida up two spots to number 14 while not ranking South Florida in her poll in her top 25. And with all of the noise that has been happening around the way she voted, she decided to speak on it, and we have sound and a video of it. Here's Haley Sawyer on, I guess, her thinking in moving Florida up two spots, not ranking USF after USF beat Florida on the road. Haley, you should have just stayed away from a podcast. You shouldn't have really talked to anybody about your process, because that's probably the worst thing you could have said. And what I'm pointing to is at the end, she said it probably doesn't matter in the end anyway. If that's the take you have about the job and, quite frankly, the responsibility you have as an AP poll voter, you probably shouldn't have your vote. Now, I can get with her on the fact that she covers USC on the West Coast, late start to ball games, probably gets done 11 p.m. West Coast time covering the team that she covers, which is USC, and you have to submit your ballot in the morning the next day. I can see where that's tough to do. And I can see where, as a beat reporter, it's tough to look around the country at all of the scores and all of the highlights and see what's happening with all 136 teams in college football. But at the same time, if it's too much for you, if it is too heavy of a burden, and you feel as if, your words, it doesn't matter, you should probably give up that vote to somebody else. Now, I'm not blind to the fact that the AP voting system is flawed. You have a bunch of beat writers in her same situation that aren't able to watch every single team, every single game, every single snap. And I don't know the perfect way forward, but there's got to be a better way forward, George.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part of it, because at the end of the day, it does matter. Like, that number next to the name.
It affects betting markets. It affects our view of teams. It affects just about everything. Your value as a college football program comes in a large part because of the number attached to your name, because of the votes you get in the AP poll.
I mean, think about it. For a lot of these teams, and even this can even go back one step even further to the universities themselves, a lot of these time slots when games end up happening or appearing on television as well are directly attached to what rank these teams are. If it's a ranked matchup, it is a lot more likely to end up on prime time. The fans are a lot more likely to make sure they show up for those games. I mean, think about it. If every team is just unranked, every game's going to end up at a, you know, for us, 11 o'clock. And how do the stands look for an 11 o'clock kickoff a lot of the times?
Yeah.
Not nearly as full as a 2:30 or even better, a 6.
Yeah, for sure.
Just saying.
Now, we have some week one of the NFL season to talk about and some week two going into week three of the college football season to talk about with Christian Fowler. On the other side, stick around for that.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. PNC's apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.